I'm Lars from Kingmaker.
This is John, all the way from Hull, also a member of Kingmaker.
And this is WMUC FM College Park Radio.
Rocky. Apparently.
Why not?
From the Blue Ridge to the Bay, it's Watershed. The Blackwater Wildlife Refuge is disappearing. Located on the eastern shore of the Chesapeake Bay, the refuge lost 5,800 acres of marshland in 4 decades. Under normal conditions, the marshes could adapt to slowly rising sea levels, but the Blackwater ecosystem has been under stress from multiple sources. Geese and muskrat populations, which feed on marsh plants, have remained constant. But nutria populations, a fur-bearing rodent from South America, have exploded, and human activity has increased steadily. Individually, these developments are a problem. Together, they spell disaster.
Watershed is a presentation of the Maryland chapter of the Sierra Club. For more information, call
012-777-1111.
Welcome in. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio here in College Park on 90.5. I'm your host, Jack Wynn. You are listening to Winning Time. It is 12 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means it's time to talk about all of the most important sports topics of the week. It's your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV area. So, we've had a lot of basketball playoffs. We've had some light NFL news. Hockey playoffs have been intense. A lot of great tournaments going on. We're going to talk about all of it right after this quick message.
Stressed? Need to talk? Call Help Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please help me?
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I love?
A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
All right, we are back. We have, some mandated messages that we play. It's important to communicate all the stuff going on in our community, all the important ways that you can get help and take opportunities to better your situation through the resources that we have in the area. But We have got a lot to talk about. The NBA playoffs have been roaring recently, and we are going to start with a game last night that was really unbelievable. The Minnesota Timberwolves took down the San Antonio Spurs 104-102. It was a great game, and there's a lot that we can take away from it. Starting off with the fact that, if it wasn't already proven in round one, the culture that the Minnesota Timberwolves have established for themselves is incredibly intimidating for opponents and incredibly effective. It reminds me of the culture they have in Miami. They play physical, they play tough defense, and they are fearless. This Minnesota Timberwolves team is not afraid of anybody. They will take on any opponent, and they will give them their best shot no matter what. You're not going to get a low-effort game from the Minnesota Timberwolves at any point. Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert, Julius Randle, all great defenders, all physical defenders who are really stepping up into their roles and playing at a high level. Last night, you saw it especially, they were locking up a lot of these guys on the Spurs, making things really difficult for them at a lot of times. It was a defensive battle throughout the night. But these Timberwolves over the last few years have taken down Kevin Durant's Suns, Steph's Warriors, LeBron's Lakers. They've beaten Jokic's Nuggets twice now. They're not scared of Wemby. From their perspective, Wemby's played barely one playoff series. He hasn't really seen competition yet. They are not afraid of him, and they are going to really give the Spurs a good series, which is exactly what I expected. I'm excited to see the rest of these games. I think they're all going to be close. They're all going to be intense. They're all going to have the same level of intensity and animosity that we saw in game one. And that's something that I think makes these playoffs so beautiful, is we're going to get this competition between teams that really want to go after each other. And you can't talk about the game last night without talking about Anthony Edwards. He, first of all, the fact that he even played was improbable. He suffered an injury during the first round where he was expected to be out 6+ weeks. He had a bone bruise, he had some ligament issues, and instead, he played last night. The reports were, okay, maybe he's back for game three, maybe he's back for the conference finals if they get there, and instead, he comes out in game one, granted on a minutes restriction, he only played 25 minutes, but he was still able to have an unbelievable impact. He scored 7 points quickly, which set the tone out of the gate, established that, yes, Ant is back, he's playing at a high level, he's not rusty, you got to deal with him. Then, a little quiet, but when the fourth quarter came around and it was crunch time, he went off. He had 11 points on 5 of 7 shooting in the fourth quarter alone. Wemby, by the way, had 11 points on the entire game, so that's a testament to how impactful Anthony Edwards was down the stretch, how important he is for this team. And when the moment's big, we talk about the Timberwolves as a whole being fearless. Anthony Edwards loves those moments, and he is going to try to be the guy to step up every single time. Speaking of Wemby, as I mentioned, he only had 11 points in the game, and this was a matchup where the Spurs clearly needed a little more offense from him. And Wemby's a fascinating player. He came into the league, we saw how much potential he had, and he's started to live up to that the last few seasons. He almost won MVP this year. He's going to be first-team All-NBA. He led the Spurs to 60-plus wins. Those are all incredible accomplishments for somebody in their third year. But what we know about Wemby is he's an unstoppable defender. That's never going to change. He had 12 blocks last night. He completely took away the paint whenever the Timberwolves were trying to get inside, at least when he was matched up against Rudy Gobert. And his defensive impact is second to none. The problem is his offense is too inconsistent right now. We know that he's a good shooter, but he is very prone to taking outside shots when he's probably capable of dominating on the inside. And he was 5 of 17 from the field last night, 0 of 8 from 3, took 8 threes, missed all of them, including one from the logo coming out of halftime. And this is something that Wemby needs to figure out. And it's something that reminds me a bit of what we saw from LeBron James a few seasons ago when he was struggling from three and trying to adjust to the new play style. The league didn't shoot as many threes as they do now 10 years ago. And so we saw LeBron kind of struggle to make that transition. He took too many when he would miss them. He wasn't used to just getting back inside. Wemby needs to kind of take
this same lesson that LeBron had to learn, which is, yes, okay, I can shoot the ball. Yes, the team benefits when we have spacing and when we're taking outside shots. But you are 7'6". You are unstoppable inside. Rudy Gobert played really great defense on him, but there shouldn't be players that Wemby can really get stumped against like we saw last night. And he should never be afraid to go attack inside. He only took 9 shots from inside the three-point line last night, and he made most of them. So I want to see Wemby be a little more aggressive on the interior. I want to see him take on Rudy Gobert, because a lot of the bigs love playing against Gobert. Jokic does. Anthony Davis always has. Giannis has. But Wemby has had struggles so far. And I'm excited to see how he turns things around. I think Wembanyama is going to turn into an all-time great player. But he's got to prove it. And if he loses in round 2 to a Timberwolves team that's banged up and has guys coming off of injury, then that's not a great look for somebody who could have been this year's MVP. Other notes on the game, the Spurs as a whole just really struggled. This was De'Aaron Fox's worst game of the season, you could argue. He only had 10 points on 5 of 14 shooting. He also, the Spurs lost the game by 2, keep this in mind. They were outscored by 13 when De'Aaron Fox was on the floor. So that's a testament to how poorly he played. You could argue that it was about the Timberwolves' defense above anything else, but he's going to need to play much better if San Antonio is going to go on to win the series. He's only scored 10 or fewer points twice since March 1st, and he comes out with a stinker last night. So going forwards, I'm excited to see Wemby keep going after Gobert, seeing that matchup play out, seeing the two of them, you know, battle each other in the paint. I do expect Wemby to play better. I expect him to have some monster games. But until that happens, there's going to be a little bit of pressure on that end. Also, when Ant comes back at full strength, again, he was on a minutes restriction and he played great. So when he gets a little extra rest, feels more like himself, you can fully expect him to be that incredible impact player and superstar that we've seen from him the last few seasons. Okay. So it was an incredible game last night between those two teams, and game 2 is going to be intense, game 3 is going to be intense, the rest of the series is going to be a battle. But another series starts tonight, and it's the Lakers versus the Thunder. And before we talk about this matchup itself, I do want to acknowledge what the Lakers did heading into this past weekend, which was beating the Rockets in game 6, led by the great LeBron James. LeBron had 28 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists in game 6. It was his, you know what, I'm going to deliver this information in a different way. LeBron James has the most games in NBA playoff history with at least 25 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists, which is a great stat line. In third place, tied for third, is Stephen Curry and Larry Bird. They have done it 53 times. Michael Jordan is in second place. He's done it 73 times. And LeBron, at the most, 157 times he has scored at least 25 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists in a game. That is almost an unbelievable stat. And LeBron, as a well-rounded player and as an experienced player, is something that we haven't seen arguably in the history of sports. He, so far in these playoffs, at age 41, is averaging 23-7-8. The next best playoff run by a player 41 or older is Kareem with 11 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist were his playoff averages. Not to mention, if you take away Game 4, which LeBron is clearly slacking for, he was averaging 26-8-8 on the series. So, I say all of this to mean one thing. I owe LeBron James an apology. And coming from me, somebody who has never really not believed in LeBron and thinks he's the greatest player of all time and is willing to hype him up at nearly every opportunity, I owe him an apology. I picked Houston to win this series. I didn't think that in year 23 and age 41, having played the way he did for most of the regular season, that LeBron was going to be able to take it to this level again. And of course, why am I surprised? It's only what we see every single season. Now, the Lakers as a whole played well. They had a lot of guys contributing to wins. Rui Hachimura had a great game six. Marcus Smart had some great performances. Luke Kennard, they all contributed to this series victory. But it was LeBron that really took them there. And it's going to be LeBron that they're depending on going forwards. Because not only was he great on the offensive end, as I just explained, but he is sixth in defensive net points in the playoffs so far. That's an advanced stat that determines how many points you're impacting on the defensive end. He's sixth in the playoffs. So we are seeing great performances and greatness from LeBron James here in 2026, which most people didn't think was feasible. Most people didn't think was possible. But here we are. He keeps shocking us and he keeps impressing us. Now, the task does get much more difficult because the Rockets are a good team. They were a very good team if they had Kevin Durant, but he was out for most of the series, and so the matchup wasn't as difficult as many expected. Granted, most predicted the Rockets to win. But the Thunder are simply a different animal. They are a dominant force that is going to run through the rest of the league. First of all, so far these playoffs, their offensive rating is 129, which is the best in the history of the NBA playoffs. They have the second best net rating only to the Knicks, who have led by 30 in four straight games and have been just playing unsustainable basketball. Otherwise, the Thunder would have been first. Over the last 2 years, the Thunder have won 80% of their games. They have the highest point per game differential of any team, which is 11.7. They average winning games by almost 12 points. They have the best defensive rating over the last two seasons. They have a top five offense. This team is unstoppable. I didn't even mention the reigning MVP and finals MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who very well may be the best player in the world. So things aren't looking great for the Lakers, not to mention we got news that Luka Doncic is likely out for the majority of the series. He might make a push towards the end, but all the medical staff say he's not even running yet, which is a really bad sign for somebody who's supposed to be running at full sprint 48 minutes a night. So I don't expect the Lakers to pull this one out. It pains me to bet against LeBron James again after doing it last time, but the Thunder have been my title pick all season. They're one of the greatest teams of all time, in my opinion, at least if they close this out. And I just think that they're going to overwhelm LA. It's going to be a really tough matchup. I think it'll be really cool if we get to see LeBron have some great performances and beat this team, even if it's just in one or two games. If he wins this series, that's a completely different conversation. And we're talking about all-time accomplishments in the history of sports. But I just want to see some flashes, try to keep it competitive. The Thunder are going to go on to win the title anyway. Maybe LeBron can give them a run for their money. Okay. Moving on to other legendary players, I want to talk about Cade Cunningham. So, the Detroit Pistons have undergone a fairly successful rebuild over the last half decade. They were in the gutters and sewers of the NBA. They were drafting towards the top of the lottery every single year. They draft Cade Cunningham first overall. It's a slow burn. He starts to develop. Then last year, they break in, make the playoffs. Don't really do much, but this year, they turn it around, win 60 games, step up as the one seed. And now people are starting to ask, could Detroit be a real contender? Is Cade Cunningham a superstar in this league? Are they going to go on a deep playoff run? Well, all those questions were nearly put to rest in the first round when they fell down 3-1 to the Orlando Magic. And that was a series that I thought was going to be a problem for the team as a whole because Cade was playing fairly well, but the rest of the roster was really falling apart and shooting poorly, and the Magic were just outplaying them. But great players raise their level of play and turn into great players when their backs are against the wall and when they're needed the most. And that's exactly what Cade Cunningham did. Those last three games that Detroit won, where they came back from down 3-1, was a tour de force by Cade Cunningham. In the first four games of the series, when Detroit was trailing, Cade averaged 29-7-6, which is very good, but he was shooting 42% from the field, 28% from three, and only 79% from the free throw line. That is not superstar status, and the fact that they were losing three games, and some of them were close, is underwhelming, to say the very least. But then you get that superstar mentality. And Cade Cunningham said, look, I'm the best player on the Pistons. I'm the best player on the floor. I might be the best player in the entire Eastern Conference. I am not going out like this. And the last three games of the season, he averaged 36 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists on over 50% from the field, over 60% from three, and nearly 90% from the free throw line. So he just took his game to a completely different level and really ascended to that superstardom that we thought that he was capable of. He had 45 points in Game 5, where he only had one teammate in that game score more than 12. So this was a true carry job. This was Cade Cunningham putting the Pistons' season on their backs. Not to mention, Game 6, the Pistons came back in the second half. He had 24 second-half points to complete that comeback. Not to mention, by the way, that second half was one of the worst performances I've ever seen. The Magic as a whole shot less than 20% from the field in a half. They were up by nearly 20 points and blew the lead. So that was their chance. Paolo Banchero went 4 of 20 that game. That's his own issue. But Cade Cunningham driving this Pistons team to overcome the odds and come back from down 3-1 deserves to be celebrated. I think that this series, and this season at the very least, could determine who the best American player in the NBA is. For a while, people said it was Tatum. People have been talking about Ant. It was obviously LeBron, Steph, and KD before that. But in this new era, it's been dominated by international guys. Jokic, Wemby, SGA, Luka, Giannis, all these foreign players. We've been waiting for an American superstar to come back in and have some sort of presence in the NBA market. And it's been Anthony Edwards recently. I think it could be Cade. Jalen Brunson's making a case. I think it'll be determined based on how the playoffs end up, based on who ends up winning the most, who beats who. But that's a fun conversation that Cade Cunningham is putting himself in. For Orlando, like I said, I'm sick for Paolo. He had a disastrous Game 6 where he shot 4 of 20 from the field and kind of sold them that game. But otherwise, he was playing unbelievable. He had 45 points in Game 5 to match Cade. The Magic just weren't able to support him. He had 38 in Game 7 to try to keep the Magic alive, but none of his teammates really stepped up. The next highest scorer in either of those games was Anthony Black. So that's not a recipe for success. The Magic are going to have to make some changes this offseason, and they already are starting. They fired their head coach, Jamal Mosley. Mosley was a very solid head coach. The Magic were struggling for a long time towards the bottom of the league, and then Mosley took them out of the gutter, just couldn't get them over the hump. The Magic have been, you know, a 3-5 seed the last few years. This year they were an 8 seed. And they thought that they made enough moves this past offseason, acquiring Desmond Bane, making some other roster choices, where this could have been their year to compete in the East, and unfortunately, it just wasn't. So we'll see who they bring in. They're going to have to rebuild and retool a bit. Billy Donovan has been rumored to be in that conversation, the coach from the Thunder and then the Bulls, who's very experienced. Tom Thibodeau from the Knicks a few years ago. Mike Budenholzer. Some good options here for the Magic. I think they should bring in one of these experienced head coaches to reset this culture and establish the direction that the team is trying to move in. I also think that they should make a few trades. I think they should rework the roster. You could trade Franz Wagner, who did not play as well in the playoffs as he should have for someone making the money he is. He's also not an incredible defender. I think that they could surround Paolo with people who are a little more accommodating to his play style. I think you need to trade Jalen Suggs. He's also under a big contract, but he just shot less than 30% from the field in the playoffs. So I think that there are teams out there who are willing to invest in these young talents. But if Orlando is trying to compete, you need to acknowledge that Paolo can become a superstar. You need to surround him with the right guys, and you need to rebuild. So we'll see how this all plays out. Speaking of collapses, I would be remiss if I didn't at least talk a little bit about the Boston Celtics on this show, because their collapse was entertaining and it was stunning. We were at the point where people thought Boston was going to almost roll through the East. They were up 3-1 on Philly. The Knicks were tied with Atlanta. Detroit was down to Orlando. And instead, Boston couldn't capitalize and started to fall apart. That Game 7 was almost shocking for me. I couldn't believe the decisions that they made as a team. Joe Mazzulla, what are you thinking? He rolled out a starting lineup for Game 7 in the NBA playoffs that hadn't played a single minute on the floor together this season. And how'd that work out for them? Well, for the first time in NBA history, three starters on a playoff team scored 0 points. Luka Garza, Ron Harper Jr., Shireman, they all combined to go 0 of 7 from the field. They barely even played real minutes after that starting stretch, which, by the way, they fell behind on. There were multiple points where Philly took big leads and Boston started to come back, but they just weren't able to take it over the top and close out. And it's embarrassing. I don't know why you make that kind of decision in a playoff game. Not to mention, like, I understand Jason Tatum got hurt. You need to protect him because the last time we saw him in this situation, he tore his Achilles and he missed nearly this entire season. So you have to be cautious with his leg. If he's injured, I understand. But you need more from everybody else. Jaylen Brown, he had 33 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, sure. But he shot 12 of 27 from the field. He wasn't as effective of a defender as he usually is. And he didn't take over the game, which Boston needed to, and which he had done multiple times for them throughout the season. He was an MVP candidate at one point. He just didn't show up. Derek White, 9 of 26 from the field, 5 of 16 from 3. The Boston Celtics as a whole shot 13 of 49 from beyond the arc. Those are not sustainable numbers, and the fact that they just kept letting him fly, despite the fact that they weren't falling, I think is an indictment on Mazzulla and on this team as a whole. And I don't know what they're going to do this upcoming offseason. I don't know what changes they're going to make. Maybe you move Jaylen Brown or Tatum. They probably continue to rebuild around this core. They just won the title together a few years ago. But you need to make real roster changes. You need to bring in depth pieces and real rotational guys. Now, for Philly, this was as much of an incredible comeback as it was a disastrous collapse. Tyrese Maxey has established himself as a star in this league. He had 30 points, 11 rebounds, and 7 assists in Game 7. He averaged 27, 5, and 7 on the series. Those are superstar numbers. He took over games late. He was unstoppable. There was seemingly nobody on the Celtics who could guard him. And he now is in conversations for one of the 10, 15 best players in the NBA. That's a real conversation that we're going to need to have, because he has been great all year, and he's proving that he steps up in the big moments. Joel Embiid, I owe him an apology as well. I made fun of him a bit on my last show for losing to Boston once again in his return and not looking like himself. Well, since that moment, he was great, and he was unstoppable on the floor. In Game 7, he had 34 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 assists. He overcame those Celtics demons, beat them, took them down, and moved on. I'm happy for Embiid. This seems like one of those things that was kind of serving as a weight on his shoulder. And now he gets the chance to try to advance to his first ever conference finals. But before he gets there, he's going to have to take on the Knicks. I think this is going to be a really interesting matchup. We know the Knicks have great wing defenders and players like Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby. I think that'll be a fun series to see how they match up with Maxey, Paul George, VJ Ejikom. Also, Karl-Anthony Towns versus Embiid. I don't think that's a favorable matchup for the Knicks at all. I think Embiid is going to be able to have great games. It's going to be dependent on his health, of course. But I don't know if the Sixers have anybody that can stop Jalen Brunson. It's going to be an exciting series. I'll get to my specific prediction a little later in the show. All right, what an opening. We just talked for 30 minutes about the biggest storylines in the NBA playoffs. There's a lot going on, clearly. The rest of the league is going to continue this week. We've got more to talk about with it on our show, and we'll be back with you after this break.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMB.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean on Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I can tell you about Leif Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American.
All right, welcome back into the show. We just discussed some of the biggest stories from the last couple of days in the NBA, and now we're going to take a bit of a wider look at the league right now and talk about who's got the best chances to go on to win this title. And we are starting a segment now called Wins Title Pyramid. We're going to start on the bottom. And we're starting with the Cavs, the Sixers, and the Lakers on the bottom of the pyramid. Look, these three teams likely aren't getting out of round two. They're playing great matchups. They don't really have the ceilings of these other teams. They don't have the higher-end players. For Cleveland, they just battled Toronto. They showed some flashes, but I still don't really trust Donovan Mitchell or James Harden. They think that the Cavs need a little more. They've got to take it to another level if they're going to stop Cade. For Philly, they just had a great series, but they're taking on the Knicks, where they just got blasted last night. I don't think that Philly's going to be able to replicate the consistency of performance that they had against Boston for the last few games. I think that the Knicks are playing extremely well right now. They're shooting very well, and they're just in a flow. I don't think Philly's going to be able to get past them. And the Lakers, look, you can't bet against LeBron. Austin Reeves is back now, maybe with a little more time to rest. He'll be able to play at the level we saw from him throughout the regular season. But even if that's the case, the Thunder are just so good. I don't see how the Lakers are going to compete with them other than maybe a few games here or there. Fun players. They can all go on little bursts and runs. They can win a couple of games, but they're just not getting out of this round. Next, the Pistons and the Wolves. This was tough because the Pistons won 60 games this season. The Minnesota Timberwolves have made almost three straight conference finals is what they're pursuing. So these are good teams. They're established teams, but I just don't think that they're true contenders to win the title. For Detroit, I think that they need a little more experience. I think this is the year they're supposed to go on a deep playoff run, and then next year you can come back and go after the title. You kind of have to win in steps in the NBA, and Detroit's got a few more steps to go. For Minnesota, I just think that the West is so stacked. I think that the Spurs are slightly better than them this series. But with that being said, you can't really bet against Anthony Edwards. This team plays with so much intensity and ferocity that they can beat anybody. I just don't think that they're able to sustain this, you know, level of play for that long when it's so intense and so physically demanding on the players. Next, the second level of the pyramid, the Spurs and the Knicks. This is the teams that I have picked to make the finals and the team that I have picked to lose the Western Conference Finals. Either of these teams, I think, can hang with OKC. Jalen Brunson can be the best player on the floor at any given moment. He is playing incredible right now. He just had 35 points in game one. So I'm excited to see Brunson continue to go on this playoff run. I think that he's got a lot more basketball in him. For the Spurs, Victor Wembanyama might be the best player in the league after Shea. Both teams have great depth. Both teams are really good on the defensive end. And I think that they are going to match up with the other teams that they play really well. They've been great all season. I've got them on the second tier in the league. And that leaves the top tier on the NBA winners' title pyramid, the Oklahoma City Thunder. This shouldn't surprise anybody. They've been the best team all season. They've been the best team for two seasons now. I've picked them to win the title for months. They have a top five offense. They have the number one ranked defense. They have the best player in the league, the reigning MVP. They have the best depth in the league, not to mention they're all young and not going to get tired out by playoff runs. They've won 60-plus games in back-to-back seasons, and I expect them to go on to win the title in back-to-back seasons. So that's my pyramid. Cavs, Sixers, Lakers on the bottom. Pistons, Wolves just above them. Spurs, Knicks on that second tier, and Thunder on top. Granted, a couple issues people might have with this pyramid is the Wolves being below the Spurs when they just beat them in game one. While this is true, they're still a bit banged up. Wemby didn't play nearly to the level that I think we can expect him to the rest of the series. And I just think the Spurs have proven throughout the season that they can play at a better level, a little more consistently than Minnesota can. Granted, the Timberwolves have proven it in the playoffs each of the last few seasons, and this is the Spurs' first playoff run with this version of the team. So that one was close. That one was tough for me, but I got to stick by my pick and go with San Antonio. All right. Moving now to the NFL, because there's not a lot of sports news. The draft wrapped up a week or two ago, and teams are now just kind of transitioning to training camp, to those off-season programs, and to managing all of the things that they need to before the preseason and regular season start. But I would like to check in on this year's number one draft pick and the culture change that I think he's going to be implementing with the Las Vegas Raiders. So first of all, Fernando Mendoza is already starting to make his mark on this organization. He's been in the building every single day since training camp and the mini camp started. He skipped the Indiana White House visit because they won the national title last year, and Mendoza was supposed to go, but he skipped it to go be at the first day of practice with the Raiders, which, you know, is the right decision professionally. You should go start being with your team instead of focusing on celebrating past accomplishments. I think that sends a good message to the rest of the roster that he's focused and the rest of the team should be too. The priority should be is becoming as good of a football team as possible for this upcoming season. Also, kind of a fan of him just skipping the White House visit in general. I think a lot of people have been doing that from an athletics perspective, but that's a different conversation. Now, some anonymous coaches have said that they don't think Mendoza has NFL traits. They're worried about how he's going to start in the league, and they think that going with Kirk Cousins for a little bit may be the right call. Now, those are some different conversations. I do think starting Cousins may be helpful if you get to the regular season. You don't think Mendoza's fully ready yet. You think there may be issues with the structural stuff, you know, getting in and out of the huddle, reciting play calls. And if that's the case, then go with Cousins and let Mendoza develop a little bit more. But those aren't the things that I'm concerned about Mendoza with. He's a very intelligent guy. He's a very focused and driven individual. I think that the mental side of things is what he's going to have down very quickly. From an NFL traits perspective, I simply disagree. I think that we've seen people with his exact archetype go on to succeed at high levels in the NFL. You're telling me that he doesn't have, at the very least, as good traits as Brock Purdy does, or as Jared Goff or Dak Prescott do? Because I certainly do. Those are not incredibly overwhelmingly talented physical specimens, but they're very effective in the NFL, they're accurate, and they know how to run an offense for a team that's successful. That's, I think, the kind of player that Fernando Mendoza is going to be. He's a higher-level game manager. He's very accurate. He's gritty. He's going to motivate his team, and he's going to be a sound leader in the locker room. And those are all things that are going to really help an organization that has struggled now for nearly 25 years. So the Raiders as a whole are taking marginal improvements. They're getting better each season. I thought they made some really good moves during free agency this year. They signed Tyler Linderbaum, who was a Pro Bowl center with the Baltimore Ravens. That's going to be really helpful for Mendoza at the line of scrimmage, having somebody who's that experienced and that talented, being able to read the defensive line, help with the protections, and communicate with a rookie quarterback who's still trying to get a read on these NFL defenses. So I think Linderbaum is a great signing. Nakobe Dean, the linebacker from Philly, now signing with the Raiders. I think that's a really good signing as well. Somebody who's going to anchor the defense a bit. They needed a lot of defensive help, especially in the front seven and in the secondary, actually. He's going to be a strong presence and a vocal presence. He's not the most talented player. I don't think he's going to all of a sudden be one of the best linebackers in the league, but he can absolutely be an effective player and a solid piece for the Raiders going forward. Same deal for Kwity Paye. He hasn't lived up to the expectations people had for him coming into the league, but he can be a decent player, put him on the defensive line. All of a sudden, the Raiders' defense starts to improve a bit. So, the biggest issues with the Raiders were all over the place. The entire defense needed help. The offensive line was a disaster, and they had no quarterback. They brought in Mendoza. They signed Linderbaum to try to beef up the offensive line. They've also made a few other moves. They've released underperforming players, and they brought in a new offensive line coach. See if that makes for improvement. On the defense, they've brought in good players as well, which means that while all of these areas need to continue to get better and they're going to need to add pieces over the next few years, and there's no way that the Raiders are going to be contenders this season, I think that there's reason for optimism. Not to mention, this entire Raiders team is going to be anchored by talented playmakers. Beyond Mendoza, you have a big three with your two superstars. 2 years ago, the Raiders drafted Brock Bowers in the first round. Bowers was looked at as one of the greatest tight end prospects we've ever seen. In my opinion, he is the greatest tight end prospect we've ever seen. And he came into the league and immediately lived up to it, had one of the best individual statistical seasons we've seen at that position as a rookie, broke the receptions record. Last year, he was injured, missed a lot of time, but we saw a lot of flashes of what we saw from him his first year when he did play. He is a dominant force. You can't really put any individual on the defense against him to match up with him because the safeties and corners aren't big enough. The linebackers aren't fast enough. You probably have to double him or shade him with coverage. He completely changes the way that you have to game plan for the Raiders as a whole. And I think Bowers is going to be Mendoza's best friend. When you have a rookie quarterback, bringing in an effective tight end is one of the best things you can do for them. Why? Because tight ends are big bodies, which makes them big targets. It's going to be easier for Mendoza to put the ball in places where Bowers can go get it. He's strong. He's going to play underneath. He's going to find himself open, guarded by linebackers who aren't as quick. And Mendoza's going to feast and be all over that. I think it's going to be a great duo. And I think we see Bowers start to go on a run as one of the best tight ends in the NFL and possibly in NFL history, depending on how long he keeps it up. Not to mention, Ashton Jeanty still sits in that backfield. Now, Jeanty needs to get better. He didn't have a great year last year. He had 266 attempts for less than 1,000 yards and just 5 touchdowns. He averaged less than 4 yards per carry. That's underwhelming for somebody who had the hype and talent that we know Jeanty did coming into the league. Granted, the Raiders' offensive line was abysmal. They had no real pass game, which meant teams could stack the box against him. And now that you have a quarterback, a little more creative offense with Coach Kubiak coming in for the Raiders, I think that we might see Jeanty play at the level that we expected him to coming into the league. If he doesn't, that's a really bad sign, and we're going to have some serious conversations. But Ashton Jeanty is driven, he's motivated, he's really great off the field, and I think that he's going to develop into the player that we think he can. I'm very fond of the Kubiak signing, by the way. I think he's going to be a great coach in Las Vegas. I think he's going to work very well with Mendoza. And something that we've seen over the last half decade in the NFL is when you pair that young quarterback with a creative offensive coach, you're going to be successful. And again, I don't think the Raiders are going to be great this year, but this is not a one-year turnaround. This is not a one-year rebuild. By year two or three, the Raiders should be good. They just should. For this seat, like, you've got the coach, you've got the quarterback, you've got the playmakers. I'm assuming they're going to continue to develop on the defense and on the offensive line. They're moving in the right direction, and you hope that you see some progress soon. Coming back to the micro, though, for this year specifically, I think that we can expect Mendoza to have a very solid rookie season from the quarterback position. I think it depends how many games he plays. I think he ends up playing 15 or 16 games. They probably let Kirk come out to start. I think he'll be a little under 4,000 yards. I've got him between 3,700 and 3,900, somewhere in that range. I think he'll have just over 20 touchdowns and just under 10 interceptions. He'll probably complete about 65% of his passes, be a very effective quarterback who happens to be going up against some really great teams. I think the Raiders win between 4 and 6 games. If they win 6 games or more, that's an unbelievable success. The Raiders play 11 times against a playoff team from last year, this upcoming season. 11 games against playoff teams. So for a team that's trying to rebuild, they're going to get beaten down a bit once again. The AFC West is a brutal division to be in with the Chiefs, the Chargers, and the Broncos all being as good as they are. But this is an organization and a franchise that's been trying to rebuild, trying to take the right steps and move in the right direction. If anybody's going to be the one to do that, why not be Fernando Mendoza, the guy who has committed himself to football, committed himself to this team, and I expect it to pay off. All right, we've got about 10 minutes left in our show. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are giving our official second round picks in the NBA. We will be right back with you after this.
Colleges in America are state of the. Did you know that the University of Maryland is one of the 50 fittest colleges in America? Our state-of-the-art Epley Recreation Center, School of Public Health, Ritchie Coliseum, and Cole Fieldhouse have a number of resources that help keep Terps happy, active, and healthy. Join the daily group fitness workouts, request a personal trainer, or own your independence and build your own training plan. Exercise can improve muscle strength and boost your endurance and confidence. Feel better and live longer.
While you're outside exercising in the sun and fresh air, make sure to check yourself for ticks after being in woodsy areas like the Paint Branch Trail. Tick bites can cause a serious illness called Lyme disease, which is highly preventable and treatable if caught early. Maryland is in the top 15 states with the highest number of reported Lyme disease cases. The best way to deal with this illness is to prevent it, so avoid going off trail into the woods. And if you have to, make sure to check yourself afterwards for ticks or signs of bites, which usually appear as red bullseyes. If you feel any potential Lyme disease symptoms, like a rash, fever, joint pain, or muscle aches, immediately go to the University Health Center. Don't let this stop you from enjoying the great outdoors. Just be alert when you're outside and prevent this infection.
Speech problems. Who's got them? If you're worried about that class presentation, come on down to the Oral Communication Center, or OCC for short. We offer support for students who need help with their communication and public speaking skills. We're based in the Skinner Building in room 2117 from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. But if you need a little help in the afternoon, we're in McKeldin Library room 2111 after 4 p.m. Go to umd.mywconline.net to schedule an appointment, but walk-ins are always welcome. See you there.
All right. We are back here in studio, and we've got a little under 10 minutes left in the first hour of our show, and we are going to go through our official second-round picks. We'll talk about if they were different from what I expected, but I anticipate most of these playing out exactly how I say they will at this moment. So if you want to avoid spoilers for this round of the NBA playoffs, not sure if you should be listening, because this is exactly how it's going to play out. Starting in the East, the Pistons are going to beat the Cavs in six games. The teams are 2-2 and they may match up the season, but Cade has been incredible against Cleveland, and come playoff time, we have seen Cade Cunningham is not holding back. He is playing at a superstar-esque level, and I think he's going to keep that up. The only two times that Cleveland beat Detroit this year, Cade shot less than 25% from the field. And I think we've established he's not going to have too many games shooting under 25% from the field this playoff run. Granted, maybe Cleveland has some recipe for him on defense, some way to stop him. I don't know if there's any way to stop Cade. He's too creative as a He's too creative as a player offensively, in terms of his playmaking and his shot creation and his vision of the field or his vision of the court. I don't think Cleveland can hang with them. I don't think Donovan Mitchell or Harden are going to be able to play at the level that Cade is going to demand that they do. Not to mention Detroit's defense is really good. Ausar Thompson had a great first round. He averaged over 4 combined steals and blocks per game in the first round of the playoffs, which is an incredible accomplishment. He's probably going to draw the Mitchell or Harden matchup. And I think that's going to give Detroit a big advantage to take one of them almost out of the game like that. Next in the East, the Knicks over the Sixers. I've got Knicks in 6. And it might be Knicks in 5, but I'm going to stick with my pick. I thought it would be Boston here, and I thought the series would go 7. Obviously, that didn't end up being the case, and I'm thrilled about it because it meant that Boston suffered a bad loss, which is always fun for sports fans. Brunson had 35 points in game 1. The Knicks match up really well against Philly because a lot of Philly's best players attack from the wing, and the Knicks have some of the best wing defenders in the NBA with Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby. I also just think the Sixers have a ceiling as a team. I don't think that this team can get to the conference finals. Joel Embiid is still playing like a great player, but he just, for whatever reason, doesn't know how to win. Tyrese Maxey may be attempting to change the culture here. I think he's going to really give New York a run for their money. But the Knicks are just playing at an unbelievable level. It's four straight games now where they've led by 30-plus points at one point. They shot 19 of 37 from three in game one. They're unbelievably hot. Philly's going to have to really play at their best, if not even better than that, to give the Knicks a shot here. Next, moving over now to the Western Conference. The East, I think, is a little easier to predict. You've got two teams that people expected to be really good and two teams that had first-round upset or first-round struggles. Knicks versus Pistons, I think, will be a great Eastern Conference Finals if we end up getting there. But in the West, I've got the Thunder over the Lakers in six. I just changed that. I have five written down in my notes. But as I say it, I want to give LeBron a little more credit. I think the Thunder have shown that while they're dominant, they're capable of having off-shooting nights here or there. That could lead to the Lakers stealing a game. LeBron's going to have some really great games. Austin Reeves may be able to steal one. So I do think the Lakers take two off them, but I don't think that at any point it's going to feel like the Thunder are worried or in doubt of winning this series. I think that the Thunder are just too good. Shea can match LeBron. And, you know, if this were LeBron in his prime, it would give the Lakers an unbelievable premium. But at age 41 and year 23, he's not going to be the best player on the floor. It's going to be Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who's the best player in the NBA, who averages over 30 points a game. So even if LeBron has a couple of these great performances like we saw in the first round, Shea can kind of match that. So we'll see how that plays out. As I mentioned earlier in the show, all the reports are that Luka Doncic is likely out for the duration of this series. He's not even running yet as he's trying to rehab, which is a bad sign. We just saw Anthony Edwards come back from an injury really quickly. Luka does not seem to be on that same timeline. And if that's the case, the Lakers are really in trouble. If Luka were healthy for this whole playoff run, that completely changes the script, because Luka is one of the five best players in the NBA. But if it's LeBron leading the show at this age against this team, I just don't know. And lastly, Spurs over Wolves in seven. I originally had this as the Nuggets, but Minnesota kind of broke Denver's spirit, and I think it'll be Spurs over Wolves in seven instead. Wemby needs to play better. I expect him to be more effective offensively the next few games. He's a smart player. I think whatever they look at in tape and saw how they were defending him, I think he's going to be able to adjust, play more inside. We know he's a good outside shooter as well. He was terrible shooting from the outside this past game. I think that'll naturally improve, although you can't bank on that. But Wemby averaged 34 points and 8 rebounds against the Timberwolves during the regular season. It was nearly 50-40-90 efficiency as well. So he had a bad game, an inefficient game. I don't think that's going to be the case for the rest of the series. Although, something else to note, Anthony Edwards plays great against this Spurs team. He averages 37 in the regular season against him, on nearly 60% shooting from the field in his last three games against the Spurs. So these are two superstars that aren't afraid of each other, are going to go at each other. I think the Spurs are a little more well-rounded at the end of the day. I think Wemby's going to have his moment and move on.